It's time for the Picture House Podcast with your hosts, Sam and Simon. Please ensure that your mobile phone is switched off, refrain from smoking, and keep conversation to a minimum. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show!
So, Sean, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you for having me.
At the end of a very busy London Film Festival.
Yes, yes, very much so.
The buzz around Florida Project has been fantastic. I first saw it in Cannes. And I think I maybe, like, when I just sort of went into it reasonably cold. I'd seen Tangerine, really liked Tangerine. I just had such a fantastic time watching it.
Oh, I'm happy.
It must be a lot of fun sort of dropping this film at the festival and then sort of coming in and talking to people and hearing their reactions to it.
Yes, because I'm always interested in what different countries will think of it. And it means a lot to be playing here in the UK, because I think British social realism has more than any other national genre has really like affected and inspired and influenced my entire career, and a lot to do with this film. So it's always special for me to show my films here at the London Film Festival and then get a release. It's very special for me.
I think as someone who's lived in UK my whole life, like, we don't really know too much about this part of the world. Mm. And it was really eye-opening to follow these characters through these hotels, through the motels, in and around Florida, and to sort of see that sort of level of poverty and you're right, like, the social realism was eye-opening.
Well, I would say that you don't even have to be over here to be isolated from that, because literally a town over, people didn't know this was happening in that area. And that's the whole part of the theme of this film and part of the focus of this film, is that this is happening in the shadow of places that we frequent often. I mean, this film, it takes place in right outside of the tourist capital of the world. So millions have been there and yet really don't know about the lives of the families living right under their noses.
And how did you first sort of come onto this as an idea for a film? Was it a case of hearing some real life stories and doing some research to flesh out the script?
To a certain degree, that's how we came up with the script. But the initial story, or the initial idea, or topic, I'm sorry, came to me from my co-screenwriter, Chris Bragash, who his mother had relocated there, and he got wind of the problem in that area. Then he started sending me news articles, and we thought this was something that we could definitely find a fiction narrative, a screenplay in, but we needed to get there. We need to actually start doing our research and interviewing and in a very journalistic way, just trying to absorb as much information as possible. And eventually this all led up to us shooting this film, finding financing after my previous film Tangerine, and then knowing that we were going to shoot during a summer, because it takes place over the course of a summer. I didn't want to take kids out of school, so we knew it was going to be the summer of 2016. So it was all building up to that.
It's very responsible filmmaking there.
I guess so, but also, we did want to. My films are based in realism, and even though I know there's not a very apparent change of seasons down there, it's still, we wanted to shoot in the months that it takes place in, just for authenticity's sake. Yeah,
it's quite a nice sort of timeline for the film to take place over, that sort of, because everybody remembers their summer holidays.
Yes,
and that's sort of how exciting and up it can be at the very beginning, and how kind of you come crashing back into realism at the very end of those holidays.
Yeah, exactly. And those summer months, when you're really, a summer these days only lasts about a month and a half. The way that when I was younger, I guess it was more like 2.5 months, but I remember those 2.5 months feeling like years. With a child's perspective, time is stretched, and those were endless summers. We kind of wanted to show that. We wanted to bring that to the screen and have the audience feel that way.
No, I think it definitely comes across. In terms of filmmaking, there's lots of really great techniques being used to really empathize with your characters, like how the camera angle is often at the younger cast member's eye line, and also I guess because the building they live in is sort of, you know, it's raised up. It's not a tower block, but it's got several stories. It just looks so huge.
Yes.
I quite liked feeling quite small whilst watching this film.
Well, we tried to put the audience in the place of a child while they're watching the film. So we wanted the perspective to be there. We wanted the audience to feel as if they were... they had the senses of a child again, meaning the enhanced senses where colors seem to be brighter and the world is new. And so you're hearing more decibels, meaning I really tried to play a lot with my ambient tracks where you would hear all these cicadas, but being mixed with the roaring traffic sounds of Route 192, which is right there in front of all of these budget motels. So yeah, there was a bunch of different things that we did to get us to that place. Yeah.
The actual motel itself looks incredible. That giant pink building. Mm. Was that
purple, pink?
Something that you...
Some people say mauve. that exists. It's called the Magic Castle Inn and Suites, and it's in Kissimmee, Florida, right on Route 192. And the owner was generous enough to allow us to shoot there. And it became basically our home base for about 3 weeks. The whole shoot was 35 days, but we got to spend a nice 3 weeks there, and it became, we rented out some of the motel rooms to become our departments and our production offices, and then also our sets, because you know, we needed 323 and 223 to be Haley and Ashley's rooms, and those were set dressed by my sister, who is the production designer on the film, Stefanik Youth. Yeah, so it was really, we weren't living there, but we felt like we were living there. You know, we were only actually leaving there just to sleep at night and then back very bright and early the next day.
It's quite nice having a lot of the film take place in that one location, so you know where you are.
Yeah. It's almost like a set.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we didn't own it. That's important to point out. We told them that it would not interfere with business, we would not interfere with customers, and you actually had real residents living sometimes very parallel lives to the ones that our characters are living in the motel while we were shooting. So this was this is actually real life for some people there.
Yeah. What was it like with, you know, working around people who are there living there, living their lives? Often when you put a camera out in the street, you attract a crowd of people regardless because people are curious.
At first, of course, there was that, but we always tried to involve them. If they wanted to be involved, the doors were open, and we actually tried to work in many of the residents into either background action or sometimes even walk-on speaking roles. Oh, wow. So this was something that we felt was important to work and collaborate and of course just allow the real residents to join in, and we got, it was really a really positive response, enthusiastic response.
It feels like as well as making the shoot easier, like it does add color and texture to the finished film.
Yes.
You know, like knowing that this is a lived-in place and seeing people in the background and it not just being weirdly empty, you know.
exactly. Though the thing is that those places, even though they're occupied, they often feel weirdly empty in the middle of the summer. Why? Because it's 100 degrees out on that blacktop. It is so hot, and people want to be inside the air conditioning. So we actually tried to show that in one section of the film, where one scene in the film when the kids, in a very mischievous way, they pull the power on the entire motel. Then you finally get to see that this place is occupied, and all the residents come out for a second, bewildered and wondering what happened, and then they retreat back into their rooms.
That's such a good shot as well. I just remembered, like, when you get the whole hotel block in that one frame, and like people coming out of rooms at different times.
That was I have to thank my assistant director, Joe McDougal, because that's one of those scenes where you have to basically coordinate. There's coordination going on there, and where everybody has their own timing of when they're going to exit the room and go back in. Everybody has a different number to count to before exiting the room, so that it's spotty when people are coming out. Yeah, yeah. So
That's superb.
Cut that part. That's terrible.
I really love that scene as well. You see, you know, Willem run out, and he's just has to do the job. He has to sort of run out. Yeah. And
that's his little triumphant moment, to tell you the truth. When in the film, there's one triumphant moment for Bobby. It's when he's finally getting some applause as he's turned the power on. A little, you know, just a little gesture, but he's saved everybody's day, you know. I love that. I love that moment.
What really struck me about Willem Dafoe is he blends in so well with the rest of the cast, and like he's great in this film, but his character is he's not the center of attention at all, and he's so good at being, you know, that supporting person for our leads.
He is, and you know, it also is just it. I have to say, it's about him as an actor and a human being, and he's so kind and giving and. He's also very patient, and he wanted to blend in. He took the time. He's a team player. He came down early before we needed him on before we were rolling cameras with him. He came in about almost a week early to meet with some of the motel managers and to absorb the environment and become Bobby, I think, to really get there. And he it was really wonderful to see him blend in, because to tell you the truth, I was concerned as a director that one of the few faces he was, and he's a very recognizable face. He's everybody knows him. Even the little kids knew him as a Green Goblin. They would come to set every day saying, "We get to work with Green Goblin." but you know, he's a two-time Academy Award nominated actor, very recognizable around the world, and. That was a concern, but he's so transformative that within seconds of seeing the Bobby character outside of the door in his first scene when he's reprimanding little kids, he's already Bobby. It's Bobby. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's refreshing to see him in something like this, because I love the guy. I recently saw him narrate a documentary about a mountain, which was amazing. He sort of reads a poem. He's got such a great voice.
He does.
I don't know. I don't feel like I've seen enough of him on the big screen.
Well, he's playing villains, and sometimes those villains or bad guys are in comic book movies, and therefore he's covered in makeup he's disguised. But I think back to the reason that I was I was taken aback and quite honored that he was even considering this role when his name came across the table. I said, yeah, of course. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I want to work with him. And I could totally see him as Bobby. But so I was thinking back to his roles in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I was thinking to Mississippi Burning and Platoon, and which he plays if you think about Elias in Platoon, quite a sweet character and a sweet man who is the moral ground in that film. So I was always looking to those roles, and that's what made me think, he'll definitely pull off Bobby.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So we always thought Bobby would be sort of a more known actor, considering that the rest of the cast would be maybe unknown.
Well, we actually thought, you know, when you're dealing with more money, there's a responsibility to your financiers because audiences need that recognizable face. I don't know what it is. I'm a moviegoer myself, and yes, there's a comfort when you see somebody you recognize and like, and it helps you, I guess, accept the movie faster or whatever. Mm. But so I knew we were going to needed to put a recognizable face for Bobby, but we also were considering that for Haley. We were very early on, we were thinking a pop star perhaps, then, you know, anybody of, you know, box office draw between 20 and 24 years old. But I found this Instagram for Bria Vinaitha, and I don't know how I found her Instagram page, but somebody must have reposted her post, and she made me laugh, and there's video on there too, so I could hear her talking and speaking to the camera and being very funny and witty and also just self-deprecating, and she had the physicality, of course, with the tattoos, and I there was something that was just telling me maybe actually Haley has to be a fresh face. You know, I use a lot of fresh faces. I like bringing them to the screen. And in this case, because of the struggles that this character is going through and sacrifices that she makes for her child, I kept fearing that a celebrity face would just pull the audience out continuously, pull them out, no matter how good the actor was. So I said to everybody, I said, let's give Bria a chance. Let's fly her down to Orlando, have her meet and read with the kids that we had already cast. And it was just right away, we all were in agreement and that she was going to work. And then, of course, you know, she needed to have basically a crash course in acting. She was very motivated and enthusiastic about doing this, and she wanted to do it right, as you know, as we did. So she came in 3.5 weeks, almost a month early from shooting, and she worked with Samantha Kwan, who is the acting coach for the children. She took Bria under her wing as well, and while I was off doing something in pre-production or maybe even shooting at that point, they were always workshopping and getting to the point where she was really ready by the time we were rolling cameras. And then a week and a half later, when Willem came into town, she was holding her own with Willem. So, yeah, I'm just so proud of her. I'm so happy that this worked, because it was a rolling of the dice, I have to say. But it was, you know, it was something that was telling me she would work. And now she has the acting bug, a manager. She's here at the London International Film Festival and walking the red carpet every day with a new dress every single day. Yeah, but she's ready to go, and I'm looking forward to seeing what she does in the future.
That's really remarkable. Like, you know, at the beginning of, you know, the year for her, when you were before you were shooting, she had, this wasn't her life, and very quickly, you know, it's become her life. Like, that's,
I know,
it's incredible.
It's really she's loving it. She's really loving it, and so that's what I'm really happy that she wants to do this and she's embracing it.
I remember when, I think after I saw the film, like, I was looking her up. I was like, who's this person? She's so good. Mm. What's she done? And I think there was no IMDb page as such. Any credit. So right. On Instagram, I think I found her, and she's like, her real life clothes, I think, make it into the film. Like, looking at some of her older posts. And I was like, I remember that hat.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Yes. Yes.
And how did you find your child actors? Because this, I mean, the film lives and dies, you know, on that. And you've got such a great cast.
Yeah, we took our time with the casting of the kids. I knew, as you just said, casting is everything for them. We had a local casting company in Orlando doing casting calls for us, but they also had a database full of kids. So I'll start with Christopher Rivera. He who plays Scooty in the film, he came basically from this local casting company, and particularly Patty Wiley, who went out to the community and said, you know, we're doing a casting call, just come in for an audition, your kids don't need prior experience, we're just looking for personas. And that's how Christopher Rivera came to the table. And then there is Valeria Cotto, who actually was a little bit of street casting. You know, while they were doing street casting, I was also doing street casting on my own. And I found Valeria in Target one night, in Target Superstore. She was walking through it with her mom, and I saw them, and she had this vibrant red hair, and I gave her, the mother, my card. I said, please have her come in for the audition, and they did, and it was all worked out. And then Brooklyn Prince. Well, Brooklyn was actually in the database for this company, but we, for some reason, hadn't seen her. I don't know what happened, and I was getting worried. We were getting closer and closer. I wasn't finding, you know, Mooney yet. And then she finally came in, and within seconds, I think we knew that she was right, that she was going to be in the film, but it was within, I was pretty convinced that by the end of that audition, she was our Mooney, and she was so witty and energetic and just fun and willing to, we were putting her in scenarios, just saying, giving her a little, I would say, like, Sam, what were we giving her? Little things to do. We were giving her little scenes to interact with us as if we were kids. We were like saying, hey, we're the younger kids, kick us out of the pool. And she would come up and she would tell us for every reason why we should be out of the pool. She would tell us, you know, you're not cool. And we'd say, why aren't we cool? And she goes, because, you know, you're not even allowed to stay up past 8 p.m. That's why you're not cool. You know, it's just stuff that was really, she was riffing and having fun with us. And then, of course, you know, when we, the more we started working with her and the more that Samantha started working with her, we just, I think we just realized what a prodigy she actually is. And she is so, she's in touch with her emotions and she understands character development and character and the just the mechanics of acting in general. And so when we asked her to go to those places in the film, and I, without any spoilers, you know, she has to go to, she has to have these this emotional performance. And oh my gosh, I'm just so impressed to see her bring that with on her own, basically just getting to that place on her own by being in the character, to be able to just deliver such a powerful performance. And I just put her in, I always say this, but I put her in the same camp as like a Mickey Rooney or a Jodie Foster, somebody who was basically born to do this starting at this early age, and I know having she'll have a bright future ahead because she loves doing it.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. I remember in Cannes as well, she was getting so starstruck by seeing all of the like tweeting, like, oh my God, I met so-and-so and so-and-so. Yes. And like, everybody was like, no, we met you.
Yes.
You're a revelation.
Right. Well, it was really special in Toronto where she actually got to meet Elle Fanning, who I know, you know, there's a very parallel experience there. And also, but just the fact that Elle was so nice and gave her time and spoke with her, and that made her whole festival experience.
That's incredible. I think in Cannes it was Brittany Snow from Pitch Perfect, who was also in
Bushwick.
She was just like, I met someone from Pitch Perfect. But everyone around her was just like, no, we met you and you're amazing.
That's nice.
Oh, thank you so much for talking to us, Sean. I love the film so much.
Oh, thank you.
And enough.
I hope that people go out and see it on the big screen because we shot it for the big screen.
Absolutely. It looks incredible. That 35mm photography is so stunning.
Alexis.
Have to see it.
Alexis Zabe.
And, wonderful. And the score sounds so good in surround sound. Lorne Balfour's score is just amazing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We agree, yes. Well, cool. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Picture House podcast, a Picture House's production brought to you by Picture House Cinemas. We would like to thank everyone who works at Picture House Cinemas and everyone who has ever attended a screening of a film at a Picture House cinema. Thanks for listening and see you next week.